Welcome back, my dears. Again, I hope however that time was spent, that it was in some way nourishing, nurturing. And as I said, we'll just move into the sit. So I want to invite, or and by sit, it doesn't have to be literal. Your body might need to continue lying down. That's fine. Please take care of your body. Want to invite you to allow the body to come into a posture that allows you to feel upright and alert. And again, this doesn't have to be physically upright, but energetically. Can we allow the body to be in a posture that allows there to be enough, again, alertness, enough relaxation to be available to the awareness, to these teachings? So just to kind of check that out as an invitation, are there any micro or macro adjustments I can make to the body? Perhaps we're rolling back and down on the shoulders. That might invite in a little more ease, some breathing into the belly. It's really hard to be available to ourselves when the body's really constricted. So, in whatever way there might be possible to relax a little, just to invite that in. With no judgment or expectation, it's just a simple invitation. Is there anywhere that could relax a little bit? Allowing there to be a little emphasis on the exhale, a longer exhale. And for the anchor of our sit today, I want to invite us to stay in the body. Keep our attention in the body might be a more accurate thing to say. And let's say with the earth element of the bones, can we allow ourselves to rest in these bones, in the skeletal form, as we rest upon the earth? Just to see what it's like if you really allow yourself to drop into the bones in the joints, from the skull and the jawbone. Just allowing there to be perhaps a lingering of attention in the jawbone. If it's helpful to place your hands on either side of your ears, if that makes sense, and allow yourself to cup your jaw with your hands. Again, as an invitation to rest, to release. Might be helpful to place your index finger behind the ears. Fingers and hands along the jaw and neck. Again, just as an invitation, so we hold ourselves to relax, just to settle. This can help settle the vagus nerve. And allowing the attention to travel down the spine, the rib cage, into the pelvic bowl, the long bones of the legs, down to the feet, including the long bones of the arms. And again, just seeing what is it like if I allow myself to rest my attention in the bones. This earth element, yeah. So it is beneath us, around us in the form of rocks and trees and mountains and hillsides. Okay. Can we allow ourselves to be available to this earth element that it exists within and without? As many of you know, this is one of my favorite practices. For me, it's so helpful in interrupting the mind, the thinking mind that can sometimes take over. So just by the mind's going to do what it does, but we keep directing our attention back into the bones, into the earth element. Can I just rest in the body? Noticing how the wind element comes in the form of the breath, right? And inhale and exhale. Nowhere else to go, nothing else to do. We just breathe in, breathe out. Feel ourselves resting in the bones in this moment, in the next moment. Shortening our gaze of expectation to just be this moment right here. This breath in, this breath out, resting in the bones, noticing again, breath in, breath out. For some of us, I'm aware that breath is not a neutral anchor. Breathing issues, respiratory issues, asthma, let it go. Yeah, don't worry about it. Perhaps then keep more of the attention just in the bones. Resting. Please remember there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, and we see how it is. And this courageous act of turning towards, how is it here? Yeah. Just now, in this moment, in this breath, in this moment, in this breath. So happy we get to sit together. Thank you, Carlita, for ringing the bell. Someday we should have a class on just that moment when the bell rings. What happens? There's an exhale, like, whew, finally, whatever. It's such an interesting place to kind of keep the attention of what does happen when that bell rings. I notice myself, I'm like, oh, this exhale. Not so much in relief, but I just love the sound. Anyway, just again, happy to be with y'all. And today I wanted to play kind of in the arena of the Brahmaviharas, particularly metta and compassion, and the role that all four of metta, loving kindness, compassion, joy, sympathetic joy, and equanimity in English. These heart qualities, as many of you know, but in case you don't, are referred to as the divine abodes. If you've ever spent a night on the land at Spirit Rock, the dorms are named after these heart qualities as the sleeping abodes. These qualities, the Brahmaviharas, which is the Pali word. When the heart is open, this is where we dwell, right? The loving kindness, the natural quivering of the heart of compassion, the delight in others' good fortune, and sympathetic joy, and the balancing crown jewel of the heart is equanimity, that allows us to stay balanced and open-hearted. And as, again, many of you know, the metta practices, the mythology, the story, is that their practice is born out of protection, that the Buddha sent some monks into the woods, and the monks went into the woods where they practiced, and they got really scared. The tree spirits and the animal spirits and you name it kind of came to haunt these monks, because they're kind of like, who are these people and why are they in our space? As the story goes, like, terrible smells and sounds, and the monks are like, it's scary. And they run back to the Buddha like, we don't want to practice there. Can we go somewhere else? Which is a very relatable sense, right? Like, this sucks. Get me out of here, right? I know I've had that sense. And this beautiful story, and he's like, yeah, okay. You need some protection. So he teaches, the offers the Metta Sutta, which I'll read, but these practices of offering the tree spirits, the animals, whatever were there, these well wishes, may you be happy, may you be healthy, may you be peaceful, practicing with a Metta Sutta. So the monks go back to the woods where they were. They practice this way in relationship with these demon spirits, whatever you want to call them, the inhabitants of the forest grove. And they become friends. And they're able to stay in the woods and practice with the support of these beings. And it's such a, I don't know if it's metaphorical or not, but this archetypal really story of how do we relate to that which scares us, and the flight response is like, let's go, which is super appropriate when we're being chased by a lion or in some physical danger, when the appropriate response is to flee. But so often in our lives, it's the unpleasant, if it's physical pain or relationship pain or work stress or financial stress, we want to run. And running can be physically exercise, and sometimes that's 100% skillful means. And sometimes it has more of the, like, let me leave quality. We can leave with too much time on the internet and Netflix binging and alcohol and sex and drugs and shopping, you name it, there are myriad of ways that we can leave. And these teachings are like, honey, come back. So, well, since I mentioned it, I had an order and now I changed it up. Since I mentioned it, I'll read the Metta Sutta, because it's so beautiful and very helpful and very instructive. So this is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble, not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and unseen, those living near and far away, the born and unborn, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or sitting, walking or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. It's so instructive, gentle in speech, humble, not conceited. All beings be at ease. And that key closing, the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views about ourselves, about others, about the world. I love that. There's much more to be said about that, but I wanted to name it as these are the direct teachings from the Buddha. Yeah. And then Sharon Salzberg and her teacher in Burma brought back the way that we practice in this tradition, the Spirit Ark and IMS tradition of working with the phrases. The nuns at Aloka Vihara work with metta in a different way. They don't use the phrases, but more radiating. So there are different ways to work with it, but it's very much is part of the original teachings of the Buddha. And I think it's just important to allow ourselves to drop into the lineage of these teachings, of these teachings of the heart as born out of a protection, the need for protection. Yeah. That line about the sense of false security is the only kind there is. There really aren't ways that we can literally be secure in a world that's constantly changing when we can really understand the law of impermanence. All that comes into our lives, we will lose. All that we love, all those beings that we love, we will lose. Nothing stays the same. That law of impermanence, all that arises, passes away, coupled with the law of, in this human realm, there is suffering, the first noble truth, dukkha. They're related, right? Because we want to hold on. We want to hold on to the people we love. We want to hold on to when situations are working in our favor. We want to hold on to our health. Oh, we're going to lose it all, right? When we can allow ourselves to stand in that truth of both dukkha, this human realm has suffering, oh, and everything changes. And the impermanence is great when things suck. We're going through my divorce. I've never been happier to practice with impermanence. Like, this will pass, right? And when things are good, it's like, please, no, let it stay this way. That's the grip in a form of a fixed view, like, please. Yeah. So when we can surrender to, okay, it comes and it goes. However, this is from Lao Tzu. We always hope someone else has the answer. Always we hope someone else has the answer. Some other place will be better. Some other time it will all work out. This is it. No one else has the answer. No other place will be better. It has already turned out. At the center of your being, you have the answer. You know who you are. You know what you want. There's no need to run outside for better seeing, no need to peer from a window, rather abide at the center of your being, for the more you leave it, the less you learn. Search your heart and see the way back. To do is to be. We're pretty conditioned to look outside ourselves, right? In school, the teacher always knows best, which is sometimes true. I'm kidding. But there's a way that we have been sort of conditioned to abdicate our sense of knowing. Kids are not really taught to trust their intuition, their sense of what's true. I'm not saying they should challenge their teachers in school and be disrespectful in any way, but how the outsourcing of our lives to professionals. And I say that as one of the professionals that people outsource things to. And sometimes there's absolutely a need, but the need of looking outward can come at a cost of not allowing ourselves to trust our intuition, particularly as women. We lose it in relationships that are abusive. Some of us had childhoods that were abusive where it's like, what are you feeling? That's not right. You shouldn't feel that way. That's not true. When the reality that we are experiencing is not mirrored by someone else to say, yes, I'm seeing that, we lose our compass, right? And then in our lives, we need to figure out, how do I get it back? How do I start trusting myself? The Brahmaviharas. And I say this as someone, this is my path. When I first started practicing, I did nothing but metta. How we can start to trust in this reliable, strong, wise heart of ours and its connection to our intuitional knowing, right? This is our Buddha nature, the inherent knowing, trusting. Oh, I see this. I see this about myself. I can see the habits of the mind that don't serve me. I can see the walls in my heart that I can unpack or know when they're there. Our sense of trusting in what we know to be good about ourselves, right? Sort of the basic themes of this class we talk about all the time. And yet there can be this push like, can't someone just tell me what to do? Those of us who have had health challenges, that sense of like, I'm going to find the right modality, the right doctor, the right acupuncturist, the right something. And sometimes that's true. And sometimes it's like, okay, wait, what do I know to be true about what's happening in my life, whether it's health, relationships, work, it doesn't matter. It's that, how do we turn the gaze back to, oh, wait a minute. There are inborn traits. These are the teachings. The natural birthright is a steady mind, a wise heart. All right, Jack's beautiful book, The Wise Heart. Yeah. But these are our natural states. That's not where a lot of us live a lot of the time, because there's so much going on. And when we can turn back to these, particularly the teachings in the Metta Sutta, the practices of loving kindness, of self-compassion, oh, there's a little bit more space, a little bit more understanding, a little bit more capacity to meet whatever's going on in our lives with a sense of generosity, with kindness, with compassion. It's a poem by James Crew, Self-Compassion. My friend and I snickered the first time we heard the meditation teacher, a grown man, call himself Honey, with a hand placed over his heart to illustrate how we too might become more gentle with ourselves and our runaway minds. It's been years since we sat with legs twisted on cushions, holding back our laughter. But today, I found myself crouched on the floor again, not meditating exactly, just agreeing to be still, saying honey to myself each time I thought about my husband splayed on the couch with aching joints and fever from a tick bite. What if he never gets better? Or considered the threat of more wildfires, the possible collapse of the Gulf Stream, and then remembered that in a few more minutes, I'd have to climb down to the cellar and empty the bucket I placed beneath the leaky pipe that can't be fixed until next week. How long do any of us really have before the body begins to break down and empty its mysteries into the air? Oh, honey, I said for once, without a trace of irony or blush of shame, the touch of my own hand on my chest, like that of a stranger, oddly comforting in spite of the facts. And I love that, because I too remember when I was first listening to talks before I sat my tree, I was like, who talks like this? So foreign to me, right? Like, oh. But that softening into ourselves, right? The faith, sadha, which is, what do we rest the heart upon? Can we have faith in our capacity to meet what comes? But first, can we have faith in our capacity to meet ourselves with a sense of compassion and ease, to do no harm, right? To not deceive ourselves. Being able to offer that sense of, may I be happy, and may I be peaceful, may I be healthy, may I be free, both as a way to unify the mind a way to strengthen the heart, because that's the best protection we have. One of the lines in the Metta practice, may my goodness protect me, born out of the knowledge that this practice of emboldening, strengthening, clarifying the natural inborn qualities of our heart, that's the protection we need. In a world that, wow, there's a lot of things to be scared about. That, I don't know, 10 years ago, I wasn't scared about banks closing and viruses and all the things that probably have, maybe not the banks closing, but all that's happening now, there's a lot of fear that can just be palpable, which is why I feel like we need these teachings ever more as a way of have a foundation of, okay, this I know to be true. And sometimes we might be like, well, not yet. I might not be there yet, or I might not be there on this day. Okay. So we just practice, right? We have faith, and there's a developing of confidence that the soft, that we know the heart's true nature. It's just been clouded over. I spoke last week about the hindrances, the grasping, the pushing away, the restlessness, the anxiety, the sloth and torpor, the checking out, dissociating, or the doubt. Right? That's part of our daily life too. Okay. Those things are true, right? They come and they go. The steadiness of the heart though, when we can really land in it and know it to be true, it becomes unshakable. This is what the Buddha said. When we really can drop in and know because it is true. And again, at the Hipostico, the follower like, check it out. Don't believe what I'm saying, but check it out. When we can feel the strength, the nobility of the open, strong heart, there's a lot of power there. Actually, there can be like expressions of fierce compassion, the lion-hearted expression of the heart, and the soft, gentle. It doesn't come in one particular form, right? Sometimes we need that fierceness, that strong boundary of, oh no. That can be loving kindness and compassion, equanimity and joy, and that fierceness. But this isn't doormat practice. This is like, okay, can I feel this full strength of my heart? Because it's a poem by Mark Nepo, not according to plan. As many of our lives go, not according to plan. When I drop my glasses in the airport and they're crushed on the walkway between terminals, I get to meet the three kind souls who helped me on my way. And then I hear you crying after everyone has left. So I bring you water and hear your story. Ever since the lock on my door broke, I have more visitors. Now the road I always take is detoured, which I curse, until I see the heron glide across the small pond I didn't know was there. Our lives don't go according to plan most of the time. I've shared this before, but that line that I've never been able to validate or cite that back in the day when the space shuttle would leave Earth and go to the International Space Station, 95% of the time it's off course. It's one of my favorite facts ever, right? We do this. We see how it goes. And when we can land in our heart, let me rephrase that. When we can stand in the truth of the goodness of our heart, it's a lot easier to make those corrections. It's a lot easier to meet when things do not go according to the plan that we had. It's like, oh, right, things change. We have ideas. I want it to go like this. It's an idea, as we know, because we practice with the thoughts. It's some intangible thing of no substance. We get fixed to it, right? A fixed idea of, well, this is what I want to happen, what I want for my life, our kids' lives, people we love, their lives, the earth's trajectory. We have fixed views. Things change. Things don't go according to plan. That's dukkha, right? That can be translated as just suffering, but also stress, dissatisfaction. It's part of it. Okay. So when we can, again, stand in the faith of the goodness of our heart, it's mighty powerful. This is from Devin Barry, who's this amazing teacher. If you ever have the chance to sit with him or listen to his talks, please do so. He used to teach Mort Spierock, and now he's back east. But this is a quote from him. He's speaking about loving kindness on retreat, but it works out in the world. He writes, loving kindness is intended as an antidote to anger and ill will, the second of the five hindrances. Again, the particular circumstances of an intensive retreat can uncover layers of resentment previously unsuspected, swelling up from the mind's hidden depths. One may become angry with one's fellow meditators, the teacher, one's room, the food, the weather, the rumblings of one's own mind. By cultivating loving kindness, we counteract ill will and generate feelings of friendliness and kindness. The meditation on loving kindness also accentuates the altruistic dimensions of practice, showing us that we practice not merely for our own benefit, but to make ourselves a fit vehicle for truly benefiting others. Right? That's what we're doing. Yeah, it can be so much about orienting towards self, working on the self-improvement project that seems lifelong, in the service of being able to be a better vehicle for truly benefiting others. You know, your own oxygen mask first. Okay, how do we tend to our own hearts, cultivate that garden, yeah, of the qualities of our own individual heart's expressions such that we can be of benefit to others? All right, I'm going to invite you to close your eyes. And just a lot of words. Just come back into your own body. If it's helpful, hand to the heart, hand to the belly, and just feeling into yourself sitting here. And I'm not going to do a whole guided metta practice, but just a mini tiny baby metta practice, and starting with ourselves. So if it's helpful, hand to the heart, hand to the belly, and just to offer yourself the phrase of, may I be happy, may I be peaceful, may I be healthy and strong in my body, safe from inner and outer harm. May I live with ease. And just notice how these phrases land as you offer them to yourself. If there's a pushback or like, oh God, I don't like this practice, you know, whatever. Just staying open and curious to how it is to offer these phrases to yourself. Can you let yourself drink them in? May I be happy, healthy, peaceful. May I be healthy and strong in my body. May I be safe from inner and outer harm. May I live with ease. Let your body drink these phrases in. To feel the coolness of these words move through the body like a salve or a balm. May you be happy, healthy, peaceful. May you be free from inner and outer harm. May you be healthy and strong in the body. May you live with ease. And as you try on drinking these words in, how these words might empower the heart or steady the heart or help dissolve the hindrances that may bind the heart. To imagine these practices in their fullness, almost as a shield of protection, and imagine walking down the street with this shield of loving kindness and compassion and joy and equanimity that doesn't shield the heart in a closed off way, but it's so embodied that the heart is protected by its own natural goodness. It's as if there were a shield. And you can walk in the world and offer these phrases to others. May you be happy and healthy and peaceful. to those beings we know and don't know, to the animals and birds and bugs. May you be happy and healthy. May all beings everywhere be happy and healthy, peaceful and calm. May we all abide in that sublime truth of not holding to fixed views. The pure-hearted one having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. So thank you. I'm going to stop there. And thank you very much for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.